Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Sunday evening. Joining me from Fort Myers, Florida, is our front office insider, longtime NBA executive, our NBA executive on our staff, Bobby Marks. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, Brian. How are we?
I'm good, thanks. Today, I'm you know, in a, it's a weird thing, but I'm actually in London right now. And I went to Arsenal versus Man United proper football today. It's a great experience. Arsenal, the home team, won 3-2 in the final minute of regulation. So it was an awesome game. There's a lot that the Premier League does right that the NBA could learn from. And I know it's obviously a very different sport, but it was a bit of a tough weekend for the NBA because we've had another issue of resting players. This has been happening for 5-6 years now. And the reason it's interesting, Bobby, is because the collective bargaining agreement talks are going on. And I've heard like several times, I hear people say, oh, wait till the owners get to deal with this. I don't think this is an issue that's bigger than just talks with the players. You know, like this is it's not an issue of like a bargaining issue. This is not really a negotiable thing. And so, like Steve Kerr, Friday, you know, the Warriors were in town in January on a Friday night in Cleveland, and it's not just a big ticket that the champs are in town on a Friday night in the winter because there's not a lot of other options in Cleveland, but also the teams charge a premium for those tickets. And not only that, but you know, they announced that Steph and Clay and Draymond and Wiggins were going to be out with a few hours before tip off. And we've seen this repeat over and over. And Steve Kerr just was like, look, I feel terrible, but we're making the best decision we can. And what happens is when this happens, a lot of people complain about it. A lot of people, including Steve, who, you know, reaffirmed his desire to have a 72-game season. But a lot of people come up with reasons, you know, things that they could do to alleviate it. But Bobby, I don't think there's a magic bullet. And I don't think there's going to be a magic bullet coming in this CBA. Of all the stuff that I've heard is under discussion as they work through their talks towards the newest deadline, which is in February. I don't know. I don't think this is going to be something that's resolved, and I don't know what you do about it.
Well, I agree. And I think if you're the players, you're saying, well, wait a minute, this is the team that's dictating if we play or not, right? The strength and conditioning or the sports science staff, it's a team. Steph Curry's not going to Steve Kerr or Draymond or Andrew Wiggins or Klay Thompson. It's the medical staff saying this is kind of where their load management with is where they are. It's a back-to-back game. It's all scheduled out. So it's not going to be this is not a collectively bargained thing between the players who would say, hey, we want to play, but we're following what our sports science staff is saying here. I don't see, unless we start, shrinking the schedule down. But here's an example, Brian. I mean, Philadelphia is in Sacramento on Saturday night. They were in Portland on Thursday night. It wasn't a back-to-back. And Joel Embiid and James Harden didn't play. And they don't play again until Tuesday. So who's to say if we go 66 games or 65 games, teams are going to take that approach like Philadelphia did. I mean, the Clippers played Dallas on Sunday afternoon and won. And you're watching Kawhi Leonard and you're saying, man, I'd love to see Kawhi out there for 70. He was tremendous. I mean, for 70 games, and it might benefit the Clippers at the end of the day, how rested he might be when we get towards the playoffs here. And I think the only thing I would say is that I hate to say, if you're a paying customer and you want to go see one of these players, you got to look at the schedule and see where that team is, right? Like there's a buyer beware sticker. If Golden State's kind of on a back-to-back in Boston and you live in Cleveland, then you have to think twice about buying the ticket here. So it's a tough situation here. But as I said, unless we shrink the schedule, I think the one thing, and it's hard And so I've had people say, well, eliminate back-to-backs. I mean, you know, I've done the scheduling when I was with the Nets. It's like doing a puzzle. You share the most arenas are shared with NHL. Some teams have three. LA's got three teams in there. Finding dates is not easy, right? Like matching dates up here. I would say the one thing that the league maybe could do a better job at is if you have a Western Conference team going east or an Eastern Conference team out west, maybe not play it. Have that try to work where it isn't a back to back, right? Where it would alleviate maybe that risk as far as a Curry or a Thompson not playing here. I mean, that's really the only solution if we don't want to touch 82 games and shrink that down a little bit.
Yeah. So I've talked about this occasionally over the years. And when I have talked about it, I, without fail, get frustrations and complaints from either side. So for example, the league has said that they have worked very hard to reduce back-to-backs. They have eliminated four games in five nights, which were, you know, used to have that, what, at least twice a year? Used to have that?
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, we back in the day, I mean, it was like three times. I think we had like three times.
I remember doing it as a beat writer, and several times when I was covering the Cavs or the Heat, those are the two teams I was a beat writer for, we had four and five nights, and all four of those games were on the road. Occasionally, maybe they would be in the same area, you know, so you didn't have the tough and the travel. But I distinctly remember a back-to-back where two games were in Texas and two games were in Florida over 5 days. So you're in four different cities taking four different flights. They got rid of that. And, you know, there's been all these other measures. They've increased the time at the All-Star break. They've reduced preseason games. And so, you know, the league can show data and say, look, we're working on it. We're listening. We're trying to make this happen. They've altered the schedule so that the national TV games are sheltered a little bit from being the second night of back-to-backs. So the league has definitely taken it. But then I can say the other side, which is that in the Adam Silver tenure, which is now a decade, there has been an adjustment to the schedule. And that adjustment has been to add games. They have added games. They've added the play-in tournament. So that, I mean, it's not a game for everybody, but you know, out of one side, they've done more. On the other side, they're adding games. And their discussions with the, you know, with the league, with the union and the league this year, are about adding games, Bobby, because the midseason tournament, which is almost certainly going to get in, put in, is going to add games. Now, I understand there may be a slightly less, you know, the way it might work out, teams might not have a guaranteed 82 games, but they are adding to the schedule, you know? So, you know, I always say on this podcast is actions over words. And the actions of the league are that they're not really interested in reducing the schedule. They're interested in reducing the burden, but they're not interested in reducing the schedule. And the players' actions are clear that they're not interested, and they're not interested in reducing the, reducing the games, because that would mean less money. So, and Steve Kerr, you know, talked about 72 games. I remember, I think Greg Popovich might have said this a couple of years ago, or maybe it was sort of inferred by what he said, but it's already not an 82 game schedule, because the teams look at it when the schedule comes out and they're like, well, our guys are probably not going to play here, here, and here. And that's before their guys get injured. And so they're like, we're actually already operating like it's a 72 game schedule or a 75 game schedule, whatever. And they just haven't told anybody yet. And you find out in drips and drabs. But the thing about it is that ultimately at the end of the day, if you continue to send this message to your customer, there are going to be repercussions. And that's not a commentary on player safety. In principle, I am for the reduction of games. I do think that their scarcity would matter. You know, like, you know, I've spent some time recently overseas, spent some time in France with French league games. And then they play a lot fewer games and the emphasis is a lot different. They also make literally what fraction of the money that the NBA teams do. And you know, in spending, you know, I went to a Premier League game today, obviously soccer and basketball, very different, but the intensity of these games because of the scarcity is unquestioned. And of course we know about it from the NFL. But at the same time, like, I also am a complete realist on the reality that the NBA is making a decision, basically. They may not put it in bold type, but the decision that they're making is we would rather have 82 games and disappoint fans on a small scale basis, but keep the 82 game money and deal with the little flame ups every now and then like this. And then, you know, people talk about it on shows and podcasts, or whatever. And then everybody forgets about it until the next time. That's the way I think they're operating. And I don't feel that there's any material, meaningful change coming. Again, I know that I might hear from the league office tomorrow and they're going to give me stats about how they've built rest in. I acknowledge that, but I don't think there's any significant change coming.
No, I mean, I think the only significant change might coming will be how, you know, guys are, you know, from a criteria standpoint for awards, right? I mean, I know the commissioner kind of floated it out. If you, you know, if you're a candidate for all NBA and that might have some repercussions on a Supermax, that maybe it's 65 games, right? Maybe there's a games number that you have to hit for certain things here. But that at the end of the day really impacts a small fraction. I think I'm interested in this is probably the year would be some of these teams that are playing type teams. If it's a Golden State or Phoenix, and I know Phoenix has had some injuries, but I'd be interested in, you know, a Golden State or the Clippers is probably probably the better example that, they rest guys, right? I mean, like if Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are playing, they're not playing the next night on a back-to-back. It's basically kind of rotating kind of who's in and out. If that team gets out of the Western Conference or gets to a Western Conference as a play-in team, right? You have a team like Memphis and Denver who really don't rest guys at all. Even Jamal Murray, to an extent, who's coming off an injury, and Michael Porter Jr. Ja Morant doesn't rest at all, really. And these teams are, you know, get through an 82 grind, and here's the Clippers, right? Nice and refreshed, ready for, and that's going to have, you know, that will have repercussions on the teams like these teams that have young players saying, well, wait a minute, we're going to have to kind of take a different stand as far as, because the Clippers did it. Why shouldn't we follow that lead?
Yeah. And the Clippers got fined right in Kawhi's first year there.
Yes.
For way they were handling it. But there hasn't been anything since. So basically what I'm saying is, even though I'm contributing to it, I think this is a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing. It's really just, I don't think it's going to change. And I don't have a hot take on it because I don't think that's useful. And I think it's just a complicated situation. Everyone's going to hold their nose on.
I think, yeah. And it's a small fraction. Like we really didn't hear boo from Sacramento, right? I mean, Harden and Embiid don't have the drawing power like Curry or Luka.
The other thing is the Kings fans are really excited about their team.
Yes, it's the product. And that's what it's the product. And of course, like Luka is another good example. They played in Cleveland. I mean, poor Cleveland. They've taken the brunt here back in December and did not play. And I don't blame Dallas. They played Chicago in Dallas on a Friday night, fly to Cleveland, and he doesn't play for rest. So, and that's my argument, you know, where like, well, maybe we look at the schedule where if you're a Western Conference team and you're going East on the second night of the back-to-back, how do we fix that?
Well, also the Cavs, by the way, lost that game to the Warriors, gave up, I think,
almost lost to Dallas. That was the game that Kemba played like 40 minutes. And I don't think we'll ever see him again.
He might be right. There's one big moment with the Mavericks. And then Saturday, the Cavs played on the second night of a back-to-back. And the Bucks were in town and Giannis sat. Now Giannis has been dealing with a knee issue, So, I mean, that wasn't really, I think that was, you know, they were resting him too, but I think that was also a preventative measure too. But yeah, they, you know, so, you know, you have weekend games, you know, if you're in Cleveland, you had weekend games. So, you know, Warriors on Friday, Bucks on Saturday, you didn't see Donovan Mitchell. He's got a groin injury in either game, and you didn't see Giannis, and you didn't see Steph, and you didn't see Klay Thompson, you know? So, you know, and you saw the Cavs go 1-1. Evan Mobley did score 38. You can say you saw Evan Mobley score 38 on Saturday night. So I got to tell you, Bobby, I was getting ready to talk on this pod. I was getting ready to talk about the Hawks. Because for all the trouble that they've had with their front office and coaching staff and players, there's been a lot of stuff, probably as much written about the Hawks during the season about off-court stuff that I can remember in my 20 years covering the NBA. They were actually playing really, really well recently, and they were getting on to a nice run. I think they had won 5 or 6 in a row and like maybe 8 out of 10. And I was getting ready to talk about them, and then they kicked a home game to the Hornets on Saturday night. And I was like, oh no.
That usually, it would have been better if we talked about it and then they played the Hornets tonight, because that's usually how it works out, right?
Yeah, this podcast has put the hex on so many people and teams this year. So yeah, I guess maybe they did me a favor. The Hawks are a complicated situation. You know, also this last week, you had DeJounte Murray going on the All the Smoke podcast. And probably as forthcoming of an interview as I've ever seen with DeJounte, really letting out his frustration about the way his career went in San Antonio. And I actually thought his career in San Antonio, I mean, he tore his ACL, which was tough, obviously. And he tore his ACL at contract time, and they gave him an extension that he is now underpaid on, because when they gave it to him, you know, they weren't 100% sure he was coming out of the ACL. And I thought if he was going to have a complaint about his time in San Antonio, it was going to be about the contract or that, but no, he was frustrated when he came in. He kind of had to play in the G League his first year, and that, you know, he was frustrated about, you know, Tony Parker not being necessarily thrilled about him coming in for his job. And it makes me wonder, this is what I'm thinking about. Like, it was a really good interview. Like, you know, they did a great job. Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes did a great job of, you know, getting DeJounte to be so honest. They often do with players. And I'm thinking to myself, Bobby, I'm like, well, what's DeJounte going to be saying about this Hawks season? Like when he gives an interview and all the smoke in like 2 years or less.
2 years from now when he's in a Laker jersey.
When he says, you know, yeah, or wherever. Because, you know, it's not that often you see general manager changes mid-season. Certainly not in December, like when Travis Schlenk stepped aside. And there's been a lot of reporting on this. But one thing I'll say, Bobby, is, you know, they're having a fair amount of adversity in the front office of Atlanta right now. And I'm very cognizant of letting, you know, it's very easy as a journalist to see a situation and say, one of the things I hate, I really don't like, is when I hear people say, that's a mess. They say, how many times when you were in Brooklyn and New Jersey did somebody declare in the media, that's a mess, you know?
Well, you know, I find it funny that, like, it was a mess, but there was other 29 teams that also had a mess, but other teams were just winning games. Like,
that's right.
Like, San Antonio had the same problems everyone else did during that great run. They just won games and stuff were basically camouflaged.
Right. So I don't like, it's a mess, because seasons are long, careers are long, games are long. I am going to wait and see how things work out with the Hawks. That said, they had a veteran general manager who had built this team and drafted really, really well, basically want out of the job in the middle of the season. And want out of the job that he had 3 years left on his contract for at big money. for a general manager, Travis Schlenk got an extension and he was making very good money. I don't, you know, the general manager salaries and team president salaries aren't publicized that much, Bobby, but I'm going to guess he was in the top third, if not the top quarter. Maybe he would dispute that, but he was being paid and still is being paid very, very well. He had a good contract and he got extended not too long ago. And he basically, the erosion, for, as I understand it, started, well, it didn't start, maybe it didn't start, but the big problem was the DeJounte Murray trade. Well, there were other voices in there. So you have this very young front office taking over right now. So Landry Fields, who I believe is like 33 or 34, who a lot of people think is really, really smart. I mean, he went to Stanford. That's, you know, you don't have to say Landry's smart. If you followed him during his career, he's obviously a very intelligent guy, got seasoning in San Antonio. He's now running the team. And then, there's been a lot of stuff about some of the young guys who are running the team with him. And they did, not only did Travis Schlenk step aside and they called him a consultant, but for as I understand it, he's not really, you know, he's on the payroll and he's there, but he doesn't have an office at the facility anymore. He's not there. He's, you know, I suppose they could call him and ask him about a trade, but I don't foresee that happening. So they've got a very young front office in the middle of the season. And frankly, they're in the middle of trade talks. There's a possibility they could make a trade at you know, come into the deadline. And they've got a real young front office, because in addition to Travis, they also dismissed some other guys in the front office, some guys who had 20 to 25 plus years experience in the NBA that they also let go, dismissed. And so they had a real experience drain. And recently they were interested in hiring Chris Grant away from the San Antonio Spurs. Chris Grant's 25 plus years in the NBA, was with the Hawks for 10 years. In fact, at one point got offered the Hawks general manager job and turned it down when he was with the Cleveland Cavs. And from what I'm told, even though they were interested in bringing him, that Chris has actually pulled his name out of consideration. He's going to stay with the Spurs. He's happy in San Antonio. And so, you know, now, you know, you have they tried to add a veteran and now they're going to have to maybe look for another veteran. And so again, it's, people can say, boy, that's a mess, but you know what, Bobby, they're kind of playing better. Trae Young, who was really having a rough shooting season, has been playing better. They had a terrible Hornets loss. They've been playing better as a team. Nate McMillan has altered the rotation, the lineups a little bit. Trae is taking, for the time being, it appears to be taking fewer, you know, out of pocket shots and being a better passer. And look, Bobby, they have the deadline. How do we know they're not going to make a great trade just because they're young and haven't done it before? Like, it's a concerning situation. It doesn't mean that they won't make a good execution trade here. So it's an unusual situation, but I'm going to reserve judgment. I know that they've been taking a lot of bruising from the media. I'm going to reserve judgment and just watch them for a little bit, both the team and the front office, before I declare this season a big problem or this season a loss.
Yeah, I mean, before the Charlotte game where Terry Rozier got fouled twice shooting a three, I think in the last 2 minutes, one of them went in. I had not seen that before. they'd won five, you know, they'd won five of six, including the Charlotte game. They're a game out of six as of Sunday, 7-3 in the last 10, third in offensive rating. They've turned it around here. One game out of six, as I said, and Murray's and Trae Young's averaging close to 10 assists in that stretch. Shot only 4 threes against Charlotte. So
there was a game last week. I don't remember what game he shot 1 3. Now, I don't think you should be shooting one.
Right.
Let's shoot more than one. But Trae has taken some heat from his teammates. He has had some issues with his head coach this year, but I am noticing an attempt to change behavior. Sorry to interrupt you.
No. And DeJounte Murray, you know, he's been great. I mean, 26, 50, and shooting over 55% from field and three in the last, you know, six or seven games here. I think the one thing with Atlanta is when you have strong ownership and a strong owner that has a voice, right? Like there are owners or absentee owners, right? But there is an owner, there's Tony Ressler is involved. Like he's heavily, that's an understatement, heavily involved. And he's been on the record. He came out and said after they lost to Milwaukee in the Eastern Conference Finals, that team should have been basically kind of not broken up, but not brought back. I would disagree with him where like, I didn't see anything, whether it had been John Collins, like John Collins was a restricted free agent. And, you know, with Trae Young and Kevin Herter and Capella and that group, like they spent a lot of money, they spent $300 million on extensions and new contracts to bring that group back. Like, and they're not, but they were all in the prime of their career. They were young players. So I would disagree. I would say this though, Brian, having lived through dysfunction a lot, the one thing you don't want them to be is the Sea Caucus Seven. And for the listeners out there who don't know who the Sea Caucus Seven are, we had a group in New Jersey when I first started with the Nets of seven owners, right? Imagine that, seven owners who at least had a 10% ownership. Like they all had a piece of this. And there was a lot of different voices on when a trade should be approved, when it shouldn't be approved, what gets, you know, how the roster looks here. And that's the one thing when you better have complete alignment here. And I'm the one thing I would be concerned with is basically like, you better have full, Nate McMillan better have full support, because it felt like at one point there was like internal sabotage going on with him. So you can't turn into where, you know, it's one thing to disagree on things, but at the end of the day, they're all going to have to be on the same page as far as if it's a John Collins trade or if it's not John Collins trade, you know, you move on here. And as you said, like, yeah, I'm on a reserve judgment because it's not like they're 15-35 right now. Right. And right. It's their game out of six and they have played better basketball here. I like their roster here. I don't like it. You know, I'm not putting up there where Boston is, but they've got guys in the prime of their career here. And I think the one thing you don't want to be is, you know, you traded two unprotected, a pick swap for DeJounte Murray and then him leave when he becomes a free agent in 2024, because, you know, he's not going to sign an extension there next, you know, unless the rules change in Atlanta. And he went on the record, I think he did it with Sam Amick at Athletic. And he said, like, I'm not used to all this. He didn't call it a circus, but how everything is kind of out in the open, like in San Antonio, like we didn't deal with things out in the open like that, as far as trade rumors or things with coaches here. And that would be my biggest concern, is that Murray looks at the situation and in a year from now and have to probably all the league has cap space and be like, this is not where I want to spend my next 4 or 5 years.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Yeah, so I would guess, I don't know, I'm saying I would guess, okay, that the Hawks are very, very intently watching the changes to the extension rule. When you were on the pod 3 weeks ago, I think we talked about guys who could get extended. And we also talked about how DeJounte Murray and Jaylen Brown are in the same boat where they're outperforming their contract number, but they can only increase their contract by a certain amount if they extend. They're way, way more incentivized to let their contracts expire and then start a whole new deal the way the rules are written. And because you could only give so much of a raise.
20%.
Since they signed. And since they signed their contracts, not only have they become all-stars, has Jaylen Brown made an all-star team?
He made it last year, I think, because he's got a bonus tied in there too.
Well, he's going to make it this year too. DeJounte Murray was an all-star last year. I don't know if he'll get there this year, but he's playing like an all-star recently. I would assume that they're keeping an eye on those extension rules, just like the Celtics. You know, I know another team that's keeping an eye on the extension rules are the Cavs, because Donovan Mitchell has 2 years left on his contract, but they're a little bit jammed up in how they can extend him if they also want to give Evan Mobley a max extension, which I would predict that they are headed in that direction. So there's some teams watching this. But the thing is that you just never want your star players to get to unrestricted free agency. And that's why, you know, the nitty gritty on the CBA that we think will get done before next season, whether it's during this season or it's in the summer, is going to matter, especially to matter to the Hawks. And, you know, but even if the rules change, DeJounte has got to want to sign it. And, you know, when you put so many eggs in one basket with that trade, like, you know, you see Donovan Mitchell in Cleveland, like, you know, they're a year away from feeling some heat with him, because a year from now, he'll be going into the last year of his contract. You know, I should say a year from the summer, he'll be going into the last year of his contract and, you know, be like, boy, traded 3 firsts and 2 pick swaps for him. You really want to lock him up. But Donovan is turning handsprings in Cleveland. He's talked about how much he loves it. You know, they're playing well. He's playing great. I can't predict what the world will look like in the summer of 2024, but you feel good about it right now. I don't know about where DeJounte and the Hawks are. Like, if all of a sudden there's a new rule in the CBA where guys like DeJounte or Donovan could extend this summer, I know I would feel better about Donovan doing it than DeJounte at this point. And I think you bring up a good point that that's a factor, especially for a guy who he didn't choose Atlanta. You know, I mean, he didn't choose San Antonio either, but he did choose to sign an extension there. You know, he didn't choose Atlanta, and you know, you know, the way he fits with Trae Young is important. And, you know, I think that's something that's very, very important for them in the next, you know, 18 months to stabilize their coaching situation, to stabilize their front office situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the extension rules, you know, big picture, I think it's probably in the best interest of both sides that that's one of the things that gets rectified, as far as, you know, there's no reason why you can't be extension eligible and not sign a contract that's worth the percentage of the cap when you're a free agent. I mean, it's just, you know, if the league is looking into player retention, player staying with teams, you know, at least in the, you know, not getting to free agency here, you know, we would have, who knows what would have happened with Jalen Brunson, right? I mean, can you imagine if Dallas would have been able to offer him for an extension during the year for 25% of the cap? You know, maybe they put down a $110 million extension and they were limited to $55 million. I mean, another good example is Domantas Sabonis. Like, and they're having a great year in Sacramento, but like, what happens if all hell breaks loose next year? He can't be extended because his number is so low. And now he's going to be an unrestricted free agent in 2024. OG Anunoby. I mean, there's a list of guys here who signed these basically at the time, you know, weren't considered team friendly, but are now. You're handcuffed. I mean, we went through it, Brian, and, you know, with Darren Williams, like Darren didn't choose us when we traded for him, but we had to basically, and talk about extension rules that were really outdated. They were outdated. I mean, it was basically a 7.5% increase and it didn't make sense at all. And then you try to do all these different things to appease a player here. So I think at the end of the day, and hopefully we'll hear some more about, you know, in the next few weeks or week, the CBA, you know, where the CBA negotiation is, that this is kind of one of the things. For me, it's not even really a matter that needs to be collectively bargained. It helps the league. It helps teams, you know, as far as lease. Washington would love to offer Kyle Kuzma more than a 4-year, $70 million extension that he's eligible for. Right. I mean, like, right. I mean, I don't know about Toronto with Fred. I think 4 for $114 is a pretty solid number for him, but I know he's looking for more, but I just think it gives the teams another resource as far as to retain that player. If these rules are tweaked here,
do you think that there's any ability or impetus to get that done before the trade deadline, so the teams have a clarity on?
I think there's a priority that teams aren't going into the trade deadline with blinders on.
Yeah.
That you kind of know what you're working with.
Yeah. It's not just the extension rules. The other thing is the luxury tax.
Yeah.
Because, there's not going to be a hard salary cap, but I don't think, I don't want to talk in absolutes. I think if that was really on the table, I don't think we would be hearing momentum in talks, but it sounds like there's going to be changes to the luxury tax system, potentially making the high payrolls even more penal to try to get them under control, but also possibly changing the levels at which teams are taxed. So it may be sort of a give and take. But certainly if you're a team that's at or near the tax or expects to be at or near the tax in a couple of years, or, you know, year two or year three from now, you may want to have a better idea of where the tax is going and how much tax is going to cost before you think about trading for a player with 2 or 3 years left on his contract. You know, for example, you know, a guy like John Collins, who's got multiple years at over $20 million on his contract. You know, he's been dangled on and off the market for months now. I don't think that's a breaking news. You know, if you're going to trade for him, you might like to know what the cap rolls are going to be in 2024, 2025. I just don't know if that can be sped along enough for teams to have a good feel by the start of February. Because it's all minutia. But, you know, I think obviously if fans listen to this podcast, I'd like to think that they're slightly more educated than the average fan, but every single fan wants to know about trades. You know, wherever I am in the country this time of year, or, you know, in this case, overseas, people, when they come up to me, they, you know, say hello, blah, blah, blah. And then they say, who are we going to get? Like, you know, who are my Mavericks going to get? Who are my Pelicans going to get? Who are my 76ers going to get? And, you know, this is a big thing about who they're going to get is what these rules are. And we're in a bit of an unusual time. I don't want to say it's like, you know, 3-alarm fire, but it's an unusual time, Bobby, to be at a trade deadline and to know that the rules are probably going to change in the very short term, but not have a great feel on what those rules are going to be. And I do think, while it's not a fun storyline to talk about, I do think it's something that's happening in the league right now. There's a player who's been rumored to possibly be available, who's on a big contract. And I'm trying to be vague here, but I'm talking to a GM the other day, and this GM is a GM that has trade assets that could potentially be in position to trade for a major player. And he's like, how can I take on X million when I don't know what it's going to look like, what my cap sheet is going to look like in 3 years? I mean, this is a guy who's actively saying this to me. So I can imagine what they're saying inside, you know, meetings and trade talks right now.
Well, yeah, because there's almost like a 3 or 4 step process. It's not just the general manager signing off, right? You've got anywhere, you know, certainly your owner, but you've got your finance people are saying, all right, like, show me what it's going to look like 3 years from now. And how do you know when, if you're taking on, as you know, you gave an example, John Collins, who got, you know, 25 plus million, and we've already got, you know, 3 other guys making that, you know, like hypothetical, like whatever would happen if Ben Simmons became available, right? In Brooklyn, and he's not, I'm just throwing it out there, but like, you know, he's got, you know, you know, a couple more years at max type number here. Like, can you go, can you absorb that type of number? And I think that's why the next few weeks are going to be pretty critical, not just for the trade deadline, as far as if we see, you know, any type of movement with this CBA, that teams have a little bit more of an understanding. And I think that will help up, you know, certainly we're in a slow process. Things will probably start picking up February 1st. That will help up, you know, help, you know, make, you know, either teams are going to be more comfortable or you're going to wait into the off season.
Yeah, I agree. I think my feel is that one of the reasons why talks are sluggish right now is because of unknowns, period. Unknowns about the CBA, unknowns about where certain players' health is going to be, unknowns about where teams are going to be. We're kind of running out of time because you're kind of saying to yourself, well, you know, February is in 10 days, you know, or less, you know, whatever it is. It's by the time this pod comes out, it'll be in 8 days or whatever. Because I keep hearing people say what you just said. Well, let's get to February 1st. Let's get to February 1st.
Well, the one thing I would say, though, and just it's just, you know, going back in history, though, I mean, you look at the last 5 years, and I think 84% of the trades is the first week of February. You know, that first week, including deadline week. So, you know how it goes, Brian. Everybody's waiting for that, right? You're like, if there is a Jay Crowder deal for Phoenix, and like, well, you know what? Let's just wait two more weeks. It might be a little bit better, right? Like, you know, there's, unless it's, you know, we saw Blake get traded at the end of January that year to with Detroit and the Clippers, because that was like the Clippers think like, this is the best we're going to do, right? You know, Porzingis got traded, I think, the end of January to Dallas. You know, that kind of came out of, you know, a little bit out of nowhere. But yeah, I think the bigger name guys, if a team is really looking to move off them, I don't think they'll probably do better than what they can get now. And I think there's just not many named guys out there.
It's funny. Porzingis was in New York this week, and he kind of talked about how there's been a bit of a thawing from the fans. And he talked about how, I think if I've got this right, I watched the interview, but I can't remember the exact things, but he said maybe he could have handled it differently. What I always remember about that, it was like the fastest answered trade demand, like in history. Like, he came in and said, I need to be traded, and they traded him like by noon.
Yeah, I think I was in Bristol when that happened. It was like, I think it was like was it the week up? I don't know. I remember being in the cafeteria when, like, you get the 5-alarm bell rings, you, right? Like the fireman, you're sliding down the ladder.
That's right. Yeah. But I mean, he was also injured and out for the year. So at that time, but yeah. And it's funny, like, you routinely come up with these historical data points. Like, you'll say, there hasn't been a trade in October since 2016. And then, like, it turned out to be right, you know, and I can't think of any more off the top of my head, but, you know, there hasn't been mid-level signings.
Well, there hasn't been a player who's gotten renegotiated his contract since 2017, Robert Covington. And maybe Miles Turner will be the next, you know, he'll break that 5-year streak.
That'll be interesting. I mean, Miles Turner is a guy who a lot of people in the league talk to me about, because the Pacers have dangled him. He's flirted with wanting to leave the Woj pod. That, you know, it's one of the moments of the year so far, when he basically put out an ad in the, it was Woj's pod, yeah, right? Where he basically put out an ad to be traded to the Lakers. He self-tampered. It was amazing. And then all of a sudden it was like, actually, we're doing great. And they're on a West Coast trip, and the Pacers are taking on the chin right now because Haliburton is out. But, and then they tried to renegotiate, but like, this team offered DeAndre Ayton the max, not like hypothetically, like put it to paper, offered DeAndre Ayton the max. And, but is obviously not willing to go anywhere close to that for the guy they have in house. And it's just interesting because, you know, a lot of people say that Miles Turner is an imperfect player, and that's true. A lot of people say DeAndre Ayton's an imperfect player, and that's true. But yeah, I mean, the concept, you know, what is the deadline for the renegotiation and extension?
February 28th.
Okay. Yeah. So right, they might wait.
There's 28 days in February. Yeah.
They, may wait and see what they do at the deadline that happens there. But yeah, so typically when you give stats about the history of moves, obviously it's not ironclad, but there's a reason why you've got those numbers. Before we go, do you think there's anything else in this CBA that if and when it gets done, like let's say it gets done February 7th or something or 5th, that you're going to immediately be looking at other than the extension rules and the luxury tax rules that we've talked about here?
I think it's really just going to be an amendment of what we already have. I mean, this isn't 2011 when it just basically everything got scrapped and we started from anew. I mean, it's going to be an amendment off of 2017. I do think there's some tweaks here, as you mentioned, the extension. I think the luxury tax is going to be really important just because what we're seeing now, Brian, is that it's almost acting as a hard cap for teams. You know, Miami's a good example, right? Like, you know, not signing a 15th player because they're 194,000 below the luxury tax. And, you know,
they're always,
and then they'll make a move and then all of a sudden it opens up. I think it'll be an interesting thing too. I think the two-way players is going to be interesting. Like Bob Myers went on a record and said, eventually, like, we can't keep on playing Anthony Lamb and Ty Jerome, right? Because you've got 50 games limit here. I think expansion of rosters, possibly we could see something like that. But I'm not expecting a huge, like, you know, we're going to have to be like, you know, pulling all night or reading these, these rules here.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is all the lift big, get big and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. I feel the exact same way, and I just will say that I know that there are people who are like, oh, the league is going to be out for blood with player resting or players demanding trades or players sitting out. Or I don't see any scalpels. How far I want to go with this metaphor. I don't feel that at all. I think it's just nitty gritty negotiations. I don't think it's going to be, I mean, to some team lawyers and to some team finance guys, I think there could be some changes that have to make them roll up their sleeves, but I don't think we're going to see this sea change with, you know, owners trying to force players in regardless of how it sounds. And
well, the funny thing that Brian is real quick is like, everyone's talking about, well, like we should make contracts non-guaranteed and do the NFL stuff. Like you can write whatever you want in a contract. Like there's right. No one's putting a gun to your head saying that you have to give a player a guaranteed contract. Like you can be creative as much as you want, right? You can do a Kevin Porter Jr. type contract.
Yeah, that was a football style contract.
Yeah, I mean, you can you can do a Spencer Dinwiddie, games played, and teams can do whatever they want here. They just elect not to, right? Like that's the reason why.
Do you know what I made an impression on me? I don't know the NFL rules at all. I very loosely follow the NFL, but when DeMar Hamlin was placed on injured reserve, the league made an announcement that they basically allowed a one-off amendment to the CBA that allowed him to get his full money. And I said, what was that? Come again? And it was that if you get put on IR, not released, if you get put on IR and you have a certain contract, and I think he was a 6th round draft pick. I think that's right. This is like his second year. So he's still on like the early part of his rookie deal. You get your pay reduced. That you know, his situation was incredibly traumatic, but let's just say you don't even need to tear your ACL, lately. If you're in week 13 and you have a high ankle sprain, you get put on IR or week 15 or whatever. And I was like, some guys get their contracts reduced. That's just standard business in the NFL. And like, you know, you think about, the NBA and, the protections that they have, they're not going backwards. They're not going backwards that way.
No, Brian, we had 400 at one point. We had 440 players out of that group. 30 had non-guaranteed contracts. 410 were guaranteed. And then that, increased when we got past January 7th. It's a big number.
And so now it's like way, they're all guaranteed. Well, all at guaranteed, this point, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But we see it every year. Yeah.
Yeah. And just to be clear, the Jalen, the contract Kevin Porter signed, it was basically guaranteed for the first year of the extension and then not guaranteed after it.
Right. Rolling triggers, as we call it, right?
Which sounds like you might sign a tight end too. You're signing bonuses, your first year salary.
Right.
And it was kind of applauded as like really inventive. And I was like, it depends on who you ask.
Yeah. It depends on like who's negotiating it. Right.
Right.
Certain people would say no to it, but his situation was a little bit different.
All right. Well, thank you for lending your expertise as usual. I will be just going to say before we go here, I'm not quitting on the Hawks. Okay. I may take that back in a month, but I'm not going to pile on and quit on the Hawks. I'm not going to assume. I think Landry Fields has a good future as a executive, and we'll see about the other guys in the front office. But I can see DeJounte Murray saying some things in 2 years, and I can see there being stories written in 2 years where it's like, oh, there was all this chaos when these guys came aboard, and then they did A, B, and C, and now look at them, And I think we need to leave the lanes open for both.
I think we learned our lesson with Brooklyn. Brooklyn was a mess. I guess we can say they were a mess this summer here. And then, and they were a mess in November when everything happened with Kyrie and Steve Nash. And then a month later, we're like, man, Sean Marks is a genius for not trading Kevin. it happens quick. I think for my message for Landry Fields is just manage the situation, right? Manage what you can control in-house, right? Like that's probably the biggest thing there.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. There'll be more drama elsewhere for us to talk about soon. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you to Bruce, our producer. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you guys in a few days.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.